I had a lot of doubts and confusions, and I thought a lot of it was, you know, fake, and I didn't believe in any of it at first. And then I would ask them to show me things, and, you know, within the story of Archangel Michael, I asked Archangel Michael, how can a million people be praying to you at the same time and you help all of them? Like, show me how you do that. And there was Archangel Michael in the vision. I mean, it's huge, like bigger than the house, right? It's like huge, Archangel Michael. And then all of a sudden it just goes psh, in light, and there's like a million of them. And they're all exactly the same, like holographic. And they're all looking at me, but they all are capable of individualization. It's not like one Archangel Michael is speaking through the million. It's like, that's that one who could do anything. There's that one who could do anything. There's that one who could do anything. And I just was like, okay, okay. Okay. Like, okay, just be nice. I'm sorry.
Back in January, when I first started the Lost and Found podcast, one of the guests I was most excited to have join me was Maestro Hamilton Souther. And if you aren't familiar, he served ayahuasca in Peru for over 20 years and was one of the first non-Indigenous people to be initiated as a master shaman by the Indigenous people of the jungle in Peru. Now, since then, he's been on the podcast two times, and behind the scenes, I've been in study with Hamilton, learning how to sit and host visionary plant medicine ceremonies using ayahuasca, cannabis, San Pedro Huachuma, psilocybin mushrooms, and the things that I've been learning from him really have been nothing short of cutting edge, groundbreaking, and incredible. And now he joins me for round three as we discuss the upcoming launch of his mystery school. We dive into what a mystery school is and going into some of the mysteries, the kind of things that he's explored over his 3,000 plus visionary plant medicine ceremonies. Hamilton really is a one of a kind, and there aren't many people on the planet that has had the level of exposure to consciousness expanding experiences the way he has. So if you are intrigued, interested, and fascinated by the mysteries of life, this one is definitely for you. Now, before we get into it, if you're listening on YouTube, please hit subscribe because it really helps the channel. And also, if you enjoy these conversations and you feel called to joining me and like-minded people every Thursday, I host a free group call where we do just that. If you want to check it out, the link will be in the description and the show notes for you to be able to register and join us. And lastly, if you want to find out more about Hamilton Souther, his ayahuasca retreats over in the jungle in Peru, and also how to get involved in the Blue Morpho Mystery School, the links will be in the description below. All right, that's it from me. And I hope you truly enjoy this episode with my mentor and friend, Maestro Hamilton Souther. Hamilton, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Sabri. How's it going?
Yeah, good. We're on for round three. And I'm excited to dive in to the mystery of the mysteries.
Well, I think there's a number of mysteries. So take it away. Where are we headed?
So, you know, it's cool because this is something that of recent, just in my own life, I feel like I've been really exploring the idea of just all of the mysteries. And the more I've been going into this kind of exploration, it's like the more I go in, it's like the wider the circle gets of this ever-expanding vastness of the possible mysteries. And the fact that you're now launching a mystery school, it just seems like the perfect time with what's going on in my own life and coinciding with what you're launching for us to dive into your mystery school, what it's about, and to dive into some of the mysteries.
The Blue Morpho Academy is launching a mystery school. It has come about completely organically. We've been discovering and exploring the mysteries through sacred plant ceremonies for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have come forward saying that they're also really interested in using visionary plant medicine ceremonies and psychedelics for the purpose of not just having the experience, but also really exploring and getting into those mysteries and utilizing altered states of consciousness as a means to navigate and understand and discover more. And so as we were going through the certification courses and other curriculum, a lot of the students just said, launch a mystery school, please. We want to do this for our personal growth and development and also in a community. Often the psychedelic experience is very lonely. It's, you know, you can have some friends that maybe do it with you, but it's not really mainstream enough to really typically have a lot of community built around it. And so this is an opportunity for real explorers and people interested in learning more about plant medicines and psychedelics, and not only just how to have the experience safely, but also really navigate the experience to go into the deeper mysteries about life. And we're excited to be launching it this month.
Yeah, incredible. You know, I think a lot of people, when they think of psychedelics using like a therapeutic purpose or like ayahuasca, I think often think about releasing trauma or doing the deep work. And for a lot of people, you know, so many people, it is that. But I think there's far fewer people that consider it as a way of really diving into exploring the possibilities of the universe, the mysteries of consciousness, of what we are, of everything beyond that. And for me, in January, that which was the last time I did ayahuasca, that was really what the nature of so much of it was. It wasn't about me and my inner world. It actually took me the opposite way. It felt like it was this rocket into the expansion of everything and getting a taste of it. And I think there's something very exciting about the idea of exploring of everything that could be. And it's not just about having to go in and do the deep inner work and release trauma. Like, yes, that, but also all the possibilities of what else it can lead to.
Julio, the elder that first took me in and started to teach me, told me there were two reasons to participate in these ceremonies. And he said the first one's healing. They call that medicine. And the second one is divine knowledge. And that's all the learning. That's all the exploring. And that's all the discovery. And it turns out that the healing part is actually a finite period of time. You go through it and it actually works. It's not like a lifelong practice of healing. You actually heal. You feel better on the other side of it. And you realize typically during that process that there's just a lot more going on. Your visionary experiences take you into, you know, space and into the astral, and you see what's happening kind of out beyond the earth. And it also takes you into the earth and what's happening here of Gaia and of the great mysteries associated with life itself. And I think it's natural that we start to ask questions, especially as we're being awakened in our consciousness. We find out that what we were originally conceiving that we were so sure was the whole box is really just the tiniest, tiniest set of assumptions. And as that starts to come apart, like you say, it opens up to so many different mysteries. And then as we start to pull on that thread, it just gets more exciting to look and discover more and see what's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think sometimes people can get into this loop where they spend so much time like doing the work, going inwards. And actually that becomes a part of their sense of identity, is that they are someone who is doing the work. And then in that, it's almost like they can't ever escape doing the work, and they almost look for new things that they have to fix. And that can become this perpetual cycle. And I think the idea that people understand, and one of the things that I've, you know, one of the great things that I learned from you in one of your courses involved in the academy, is that it's not we're on a lifetime of healing. It's not always healing, always healing. It's no, healed. This thing can be healed. And then once we get to the point where there's the feeling of I'm healed, then the question is, what next? And I would say over this last year, I've really felt that switch for me personally from, I would say, November last year. And it's not to think, well, that's it now. I'm never going to have to address anything again. Sure, things might arise. And if it does, we deal with it. But it felt like really a solid 7 years was deep inner work. And before that, more surface work. But now it feels like, yeah, right now, nothing seems to be coming up. And it's more about just, yeah, the mysteries of God, of love, of source, of the divine, of what we are beyond this, you know, what we see in the here and now. And the excitement for me that is attached to that is, it's really unlike anything else. It feels like there's nothing that I'd rather be doing than exploring those mysteries.
The healing process is self-focused. So You know, I think first it's just doing stuff the way you think you've been taught out in life, you know, whatever, through your teens, early 20s, into your 30s, until you kind of have that wake up moment like, oh, hey, I don't have it all figured out. Usually there's some kind of trigger event, some kind of trauma or fallout of something that breaks a big assumption that we were making in our lives. And then we reflect on ourselves, like, oh, what's wrong inside of me or what's broken inside of me? And, you know, we're really good at pulling on that thread and categorizing ourselves for a long time and kind of getting into that experience. But at some point, you really do go through it all. It's not forever. It's not an infinite amount of stuff going on inside of us. And you can heal it. You heal it through the heart. You heal it through the spirit. You heal it through your own journeys and your own processes. Plant medicines are tremendously powerful in that. Along that way, it creates its own journey and you learn more about the healing journey. You know, and then at some point, you look within yourself and you think like, wow, I'm pretty good. Doesn't have to be perfect, but you learn how to deal with your emotions. You learn how to deal with your mind. You learn how to deal with the difficult experiences in life. They don't break you down so hard. They don't overwhelm you so much. You learn how to navigate with other people better. You learn how to have better relationships, you know, and then at some point, well, what's left? It's everything else. And it turns out that everything else is infinite. That everything else is so much bigger, like so much vaster about what we can discover. And you can actually make real discoveries. It's not just a hallucination or a trip, but you can actually really discover fantastical things about this universe through consciousness and the lens of consciousness as a means of seeing beyond just the physical space-time and the limits of what we would think of as three-dimensional reality.
Yeah. So since being involved in the Blue Morpho Academy, since me going through your course, there are things that I've heard you say where, and I've said this to you before, but it feels cutting edge. And when I say that, I mean, having gone through so much of the content that's out there, and a lot of it kind of feels like not necessarily regurgitated content, but you can see there's a common thread. And it's not often I come across people where it feels like it almost makes me go, holy shit, what was that? And I've really experienced that through going through the course, and more specifically when I hear you speaking on, you know, the lectures, when you're almost in that kind of flow state. And, you know, some of the things really, it's like, oh, this isn't regurgitated. This isn't from books. It's like, this is things that have come from thousands of hours in other dimensions and realities. But it's not just like fanciful. It's like, I can feel there's something in there that kind of grabs something in me that I might not even have been aware of, but it's like, there's something in me that knows that, and I never knew that I knew it.
Amazing. The Academy has foundations associated with it. You know, the certification programs are designed to take us through first a standardized foundation, which is missing in the plant medicine and psychedelic space. There's no core agreements on what we would think of as elementary school. And so it's not in any way to diminish the importance of that. On the contrary, it's to relish in the importance of the foundations and really coming to a place of agreement. And so I tried to break down all of that information in videos that really can be learned by anybody, and, you know, self-paced videos. But then when we get into the practice itself, that's where, with that foundation and really understanding the basics and coming to a place of stability and understanding about it, it allows you to expand on what we call the art. And the art is the art of exploring consciousness, the art of understanding it, the mystic arts, the way we explore these mystical paradoxes, event horizons, and great mysteries of the universe, really around existence, especially when we start asking that question, like, what is all of this? Not just taking it for granted, like, oh yeah, the earth. Like, no, what is the earth? And what is life? And what really are these other life forms, like plants and animals and insects and fungus? And how did we even come about? You know, as we start to get into those questions, which really are studied both in different religious philosophies, as well as science, as well as spiritual philosophies, you know, we really start to branch into something that is new. And I think the point about discovering mystery is that the mysteries haven't been figured out yet. You're not going to find the answers in books. You're not going to find the answers just from other teachers who are just throwing it out there what the answers are. Like, some of the bigger ones are kind of cliche, like love is the answer, you know, those kinds of things. But there's a lot to continue to learn. And what I've done in my own practice was, once I found this learning phase with plant medicines in my early 20s, you know, over 20 years ago, it just opened up a desire to continue to learn and learn and learn. And that's allowed me to explore and innovate and bring that into the courses and into the mystery school. And so I don't think there's a lot of information that's going to be regurgitated. Most of it comes from the direct experiences over 3,000 plus plant medicine ceremonies, and really preferring to be in those other states of consciousness.
Yeah, I can't imagine there are many people on the planet that have had that level of experience in those altered states of consciousness. And question for you, how, I mean, this is a funny question, how is it to be you when it comes to interacting with, you know, other people that have not had the vastness of experience you have? And you must view reality, consciousness, the world, the universe in such a different way. What's the experience of that like?
It's a really good question. What I've discovered is that most of what we think of as the modern world is hyperculture. And people are encapsulated in the nature of that culture, so much so that they believe their culture is reality, not reality gives them the ability to have a culture at all. And so they just think that's what it is. And so what I see is that it's very limited. And I try to have a tremendous amount of compassion and understanding that, sadly, within that limited expression of culture, there's also a lot of conflict. And people are really struggling with the nature of that conflict, and they're looking for solutions and answers. And what I think is important is to continue to share that there are solutions and answers out there for anyone who's looking for that. So there are plant medicines that have been part of our ancestry and history for thousands and thousands of years. It's been well worked out how to work with them safely. Our ancestors figured all of that out for us. We're standing on their shoulders and have walked in their footsteps. And it just takes a lot of compassion and recognition that not everybody's in the same place, but everyone's really on the same journey. It's the journey of life and existence. And so I try to hold them in that understanding that they're a unique miracle and they haven't had the opportunity to be exposed to these kinds of experiences. And then I don't try to force my beliefs or understandings on them. I often really just let them usually come to me when they're looking for some kind of support or help, and then offer that to them.
Yeah, yeah. And for people that, you know, that might be listening to this, that maybe haven't listened to our previous episodes and maybe aren't super familiar with differentiating using visionary plant medicines ceremonially for the purpose of deep healing or consciousness expanding, mystery exploring purposes versus the, you know, that the school education, drugs are bad, don't do drugs. What would be a brief overview of giving people an understanding of how they've been explained in more modern culture, let's say from the 70s to now, where we are seeing a steer away versus the way that you're familiar with them?
Yeah, I think that that's a great, you know, place to start. First of all, we have to understand that the sort of negative drug culture is very recent in our history, and it's a form of propaganda, and it's not complete, because sugar's a drug, caffeine's a drug, nicotine's a drug, simple sugars like French fries and fats are drugs. And then we also have all sorts of other supplements, and those are drugs like vitamins and minerals that we take. And then we also have the pharmaceutical drugs. And when I was growing up, there were no pharmacies, there were drug stores. And then all of a sudden there were no drug stores because drug was a bad word and there were pharmacies. And so I think we've been mistaught about what these molecules are. And we should just look at them as molecules. And the different molecules that we ingest have different kinds of positives and negatives associated with them. And I think when we abuse different kinds of drugs of all different kinds, we see what the negatives are. So if you abuse sugars, you get diabetes down the road, or you have some kind of heart problems. If you abuse alcohol, there's a myriad of problems that come with it. If you abuse tobacco, there's a myriad of other problems, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so there was just a big propaganda movement to just say those things are bad and not understand them at all. So it's really easy just to label something and polarize it and separate it. And that's what's happened. And so what I try to do is, instead of believing that, I actually try to look at our history and look at what I see as a much greater truth. And the first thing that I notice is that a lot of these medicinal plants that we're talking about have been considered medicines. And a medicine is a very clear definition. It's a kind of substance or a kind of drug. And it has a very specific purpose in the way that it gets used. And so I studied those cultures that had these plant medicines, some of them visionary and some of them very potent. And I looked at their cultures to try to understand how they were utilizing those plants and what benefits they really had. And what I saw was that the visionary plant medicines had a tremendous gift, which was that it allowed somebody to go into another state of consciousness or another state of understanding to address themselves outside of the box of their problems. And it was very hard for people within the box of their problems and within their habitual patterns to be able to change. They had trouble changing diet. They had trouble changing addictions. They had trouble changing state of mind and mood with, you know, things like depression. And I saw that through these experiences, not only would the plant medicines themselves make a physiological change, but it also was a psychological change, and it was a change in state, like very much like your waking state to your dream state. This was a waking state moving into this other kind of visionary state where within it you could find great resolution. In fact, I was just talking to someone on a recent retreat yesterday, and they described their ayahuasca ceremony as 10,000 visits to counseling. They said that was 10,000 visits to counseling in one night. So I think when I look at that, I say, okay, we need to expand our sophistication and our philosophy. We need to understand that, you know, there are over-the-counter drugs. So drugs clearly aren't bad. It's which ones and how they're being used and why. And if our ancestry across the world has thousands of years of utilizing certain plants as medicines, I think it's foolish for us to just come forward and say that we don't think they have any merit as medicines. Clearly, they had merit as medicines. They've been used for thousands of years to solve problems. And that's, I think, the category that ayahuasca fits into and psilocybin mushrooms fit into and cannabis and San Pedro Huachuma and peyote. They all were used by, you know, indigenous communities from around the world that are our ancestors. I mean, we have to be honest about our evolution and that, you know, we've been using these forever. And so there's a purpose to them. Now in what we call the modern world, there's a bigger purpose than ever where people feel lost, they feel cut off, they feel separated. And when they have these experiences, they feel connected, they feel reset and reinvigorated about their lives. And so I think we have to look at their medicinal importance and their spiritual importance. And I think what's really interesting there is that our ancestors didn't separate the medicinal importance from the spiritual importance. So they said the medicinal importance is also spiritually important, and your spiritual health is part of your medicinal health as well. And so let's treat that together. And these plants had a unique capacity to awaken somebody to that union within themselves. So their spirit would be healed as their physical body or their mind would be healed, and they would come out of it and have a real firsthand experience of that. And so I just ask everybody to be a little more open-minded, listen to now the millions of anecdotal pieces of evidence of people who are telling the truth and being honest and going out there and, you know, risking all different forms of reputation and criticism to say that they've had these experiences and they've found benefit from them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, understand that there's just a little more going on.
Yeah, you know, the first time I did ayahuasca 7 years ago, I had a very similar experience. When I came around after, I felt like that was 10 years of self-development in 5 hours. That was literally the example that I gave as to what my experience was. What do you think happens to the world if this psychedelic renaissance continues to expand, where actually it becomes more normal than not to have experienced ceremonial, you know, visionary plant medicines. What effect do you think that has?
I just go back to, you know, my general theory on the evolution of society was that society and civilization evolved through these kinds of plant medicines anyway. And so what I think is that you get a birthing of creativity. And I think one of the core components that we see that happens with people going through these experiences is they wake up to a higher state of vibration and understanding, and they bring that into everything that they do. And so they're more creative, they're more innovative, they're better at being themselves and their social roles. In essence, like better at being moms and better at being dads and better at being business people and better at being builders. And, you know, so I see that there's a tremendous positive that comes from it. And then I think you build the evolution of society out of it, based out of those greater understandings. So as the heart opens up more and balances with the brain, as people have a deeper spiritual connection, they bring that into their work. They bring that into the development of society collectively. And I think as the normalization of this happens, we also bring science to it, which has been over the last 300-400 years, a you know, vast expansion in our way of understanding. And so we can bring science to this and really hone with a much greater precision what our ancestors figured out indigenously. And with that, we can be even safer and more precise in the way that we use these medicines. And so I think that society becomes more creative. There's a general push to a greater form of positivity, less polarization, you know, greater expansion of what we are, more unity between, you know, what right now are differing societies. So more unity between them, as typically people in these experiences see a kind of oneness, and like the way that we've been socially divided kind of goes away. And we see that the other people are all human too, and we're all in this together. And, you know, there needs to be a greater amount of compassion and understanding about that. And so I think that naturally will happen, and we'll see a flourishing.
Yeah. I think it's, because they're so kind of ego dissolving, you know, it kind of gets rid of this idea of I'm separate to you. And we really do realize this interconnectedness that's happening everywhere. It then gives new understandings to words, and it gives more sense to words when, for example, you said a popular thing is love is the answer. And yes, but if you've never had an experience of love where it's the type of love where love is the answer, then it's hard to actually wrap your head around what that means. So if your experience of love for a lot of your life has been very turbulent and very like from a place of like separateness, then what does it mean when someone says love is the answer? And I find that, you know, when using some of these visionary plants, it gives you like direct access to that deeper sense of love, where you then come out of it almost like, oh, love is the answer. And it kind of gives more meaning and depth to some of the sentiment that we hear, like love is the answer.
I think that, you know, our language is very limited. And our understandings are very limited, and we haven't been alive for very long, even if we're 60, 70 years old. Mm-hmm. Planet's billions of years old. Mm-hmm. And so we have an idea as we're growing up about what something is. But if you don't know how much bigger that idea can be, we get encapsulated in the way we imagine and think about language itself. So when we're very young, you know, teenage years, we have one idea about love. And it wouldn't make sense at all to think at that state, oh, love is the answer to the, in a greater sense, or that there's an understanding of oneness around love. You know, that's like, you know, love between teenagers. They're thinking about themselves, and they're thinking about, you know, originating sexuality and the transition they're going through from being a kid to puberty to now being a young adult. And so it wouldn't make sense. But as you have these experiences that open your awareness and open your consciousness, I think the awakening of consciousness is something that's natural that happens over time. And the words that we use start to take on a greater meaning. And so we realize, oh, love isn't only this bond with another person. Love isn't only the bond with parent. The love isn't only the, you know, what we're told in different religious practices about love or, you know, some other kind of figure. We start to realize, wow, there's this other thing going on, this mystery, this tremendous mystical phenomena. And people have described it as a field. They feel like they're connected through the field, but at their heart, they see it all of a sudden. Like they'd just been looking through air their whole life. And all of a sudden they see this matrix that's connecting everybody together. And you touch it, you smell it, you feel it, and you know it is pure love. Like the same love you see when mama bears are with baby bears, and the same love you see when birds are with their babies, and the same love that you feel when you fall totally in love and you realize, like, wow, that's it. And many people have had that experience. And there's a divinity associated with it. There's a wholeness. It's connected with the universe. There's this supernatural or extraordinary quality associated with it. And that's just a very common experience. And so I think what we're witnessing as a phenomenon is people going through stages of development and understanding more about the phenomena that words are describing, and then ultimately coming to their own awareness about that.
Yeah. So I want to dive into some mysteries, because that is the theme. And I guess where I'd like to start is, what is most alive in you when you think of mysteries? Like what calls out to you in your world of exploration of the mysteries?
To me, the mystery of all mysteries is the universe. Because universe doesn't make any sense. Like, not where it came from, not when it came from, not how it came from. And there are some facts associated with the exploration of the mystery of universe that hint at and give some color to it. Like, the universe is a manifested state. It's not an unmanifested state. So the universe can be defined as everything that is and nothing that isn't. So everything that is, but it's always changing, but it's everything that is. It's everything. It wouldn't matter how many dimensions it had. It wouldn't matter how many galaxies there are. It's just everything, absolutely everything, the known and unknown. But the unknown would have to exist, not some falsehood, not some fantasy about it, right? So that's a tremendous mystery. Space-time. Like, where did this dimensionality of space-time come from? As we start to explore it, space-time doesn't have a size. It only has a size from within it, but it doesn't have a size in its own right. It's not comparable to any other space-time. That would also be space-time too. So we transcend concepts of relativity and distance, and it's not big, it's not small. It within it, you create big and small, and that's a tremendous mystery. So just, it's not like way over there and way over here. It's a phenomena. Within that is consciousness, which is how there's any kind of perception at all. What is perception? How can we perceive at all the nature of the universe? And then what I call spirit, which is, in my opinion, the animus of this universe. It's not just static. It's not just, you know, still. It's animated. It's animated at quantum, at subatomic, at atomic, at molecular, at cellular. It's animated with gravity and energy and things like stars and spiral galaxies. I think those things are the great mysteries that right now are most interesting and have me most fired up.
And I mean, you know, one of the things that you shared that blew my head off, you spoke about a time where in a ceremony you were visited by Archangel Michael, and you asked, like, is that really you? He said, yeah, it's really me. You said, well, how, you know, you must be evoked by like thousands of people right now. So how could you be here and there? And he said, well, you know, I can do that. I can be in multiple places. You said, can you show me? He said, yeah, I can show you. And there's this story. And then you said, when you then did what you were shown, and everyone like that you were facilitating ayahuasca for that had the experience of you being right next to them. Yeah. And that was one of those moments for me, if we talk about mysteries, It was like, how the fuck does that happen?
That's a good mystery. That's a good mystery. I was taught by mystics that believed that everything from our mythologies was a kind of factual truth. So they believed that the deities from polytheistic deities existed. They believed that the things that you would find in Judeo-Christian understandings existed. They believed it all existed. And that you could explore through visions and have direct communication, communion, and contact with them. And I really bonded with angels. I just thought angels were amazing. All different kinds of angels. I used them in healing all the time for people. And so I became friends with the archangels. And we would, you know, go into vision and see them all the time. But at first, there's a lot of doubt because you don't know if it's just a mythology or a story or if there's any kind of fact or truth to it. Or I was taught to believe it, but we weren't taught to believe anything. We were taught to be very factual. Like, well, is there the word Archangel Michael? And you go, yeah. And is it the name for something? Yeah. And they go, well, is there a picture of it? And you go, yeah. And do people believe in it? And you go, yeah. And they go, okay, call it tonight and see if it comes. Or call him tonight and see if he comes. And that's it. And then they pour you a big, thick, you know, glass of tea. And you drink the tea. And then you see if there's anything to it or not. That's the true exploration. That's the real mysticism. And in my experience in the visions, you could meet these beings. And I met Archangel Michael, as simple as that. And we conversed and talked and hung out. And I had a lot of doubts and confusions. And I thought a lot of it was, you know, fake. And I didn't believe in any of it at first. And then I would ask them to show me things. And, you know, within the story of Archangel Michael, I asked Archangel Michael, how can a million people be praying to you at the same time and you help all of them? Like, show me how you do that. And there was Archangel Michael in the vision. I mean, it's huge, like bigger than the house, right? It's like huge, Archangel Michael. And then all of a sudden it just goes psh, in light. And there's like a million of them. And they're all exactly the same, like holographic. And they're all looking at me, but they all are capable of individualization. It's not like one Archangel Michael is speaking through the million. It's like, that's that one who could do anything. There's that one who could do anything. There's that one who could do anything. And I just was like, okay. Like, yeah, just be nice. I'm sorry. Okay, we're good. Like, you know, you want a hug? Okay. I thought that's really cool. Like, once I got comfortable with that, I had to kind of adjust, right? Like, first of all, you're in an altered state and you're seeing something like that in the altered state. You kind of have to quickly adjust. So I got quick, calm down, centered myself. And I said, hey, can you show me how to do that? And he goes, yeah, sure. And so in my vision, like the way they teach you is through a shift in your vision, right? It's not like they get out a whiteboard and graph it all out for you. No, it's like you sit there and you feel different and something happens. And then all of a sudden, wow, like your brain is shifted. And I realized that at that moment, he kind of looks at me like, well, you know, can you do it too now? And I just thought to myself and kind of from my third eye and in the vision, it just went, boosh, and there I was. There was one of me for every person in the room. But I was still me here, but there was still now one of me for every person. I thought it was really distorting at first. Like it was very odd. I'd never experienced anything like that. It was very strange to think like that. And then I just thought to myself through them, go help them. You know, that's our role in ceremonies, to help everybody. So go help everybody. And it wasn't like I walk. It was like the presence of my spirit just goes dish, and is in front of everybody. I can see it. And I can see it's like a shadow of you, like a holographic energy pattern of you there, like a signature in the room. And I couldn't believe it. I was just flabbergasted, just completely blown away that that was even possible and real. And then Archangel looks at me and just telepathically communicates, well, see, like, are you over it? Like, did you get over your doubt? That's how that works. And so that was a great mystery and still is phenomenal. And then, you know, once you learn those kinds of skills, well, then you use them. So, you know, that's how we manage a room of 30, 40, 50, 100 people at a time.
So the obvious question that I want to ask is, what is going on there? Like, what is actually happening? And beyond it just being a mystery, do you have any, like, kind of felt understanding of what it is? And also, can you then now do that in ceremony at will anytime?
So first of all, those, we call those skills. Mm-hmm. And those are the kind of skills we learn in the mystery school. Mm. And so those are skills. And yes, once you master a skill, you can do it at any time. There's the before ever even knowing the skill exists. Then there's, it comes into your awareness that it exists and you want to learn it. Then there's the learning phase, which is gaining mastery of it. And then there's mastery. And when you have mastery, then you can use it anytime you want. We call those tools, and we just think that, you know, these mystical tools are phenomenal, and you want to amass as many as you can, and you want to learn more and more. And I think once you start learning this way, at least for me, it was like the most interesting, best way to learn I had ever experienced, right? Like, it wasn't theoretical. It was experiential and purposeful, and it was fascinating at the same time. So I wanted to master those skills, and I gave 20 years of my life so far to it. So you can, you know, you can then use them at will, but typically only when needed. There's no reason to, like, do that just for fun. Like, you know, once or twice, kind of like, oh, can I, you know, be mini-me's, one me, mini-me's, one me. And you're kind of, okay, I do that. But now it's like, okay, I save that for ceremony. Not like really purposeful when you're sitting in traffic or something. You know? Or like, I don't know, going to the grocery store. Like, you don't need it for your normal everyday life. But then, you know, the thought about, like, what's really happening, it's a mystery. So you have to understand that I'm just describing a mystery. But the way I describe it is that there is a field of consciousness. Hmm. There's a field of it, like a big database, like a massive, massive database of consciousness, like a mainframe. And it's universal. It's through the entire universe. And that field of consciousness has within it everything anybody has ever thought, has within it all of our beliefs. It has within it all of the, what I call spirits, like all of these light beings, like an angel or like a deity. They're in there. That's why people dream them and you know, think them in their visions and used to pray to them or still do, etc. And they're in this field of consciousness. And we typically, like in our normal daily life, from the field of consciousness, we synthesize ideas in the mind, and then we act that out. And so we're tapped into the field of consciousness, but we're not like looking into it typically. When people pray, they pray into the field of consciousness. When they, you know, when they do ceremonies, they often reorient that. But most of the time, people are from the field of consciousness, assimilating their mind, utilizing thoughts, expressing their language and their actions. And when you go into these ceremonies, you reorient that direction, you flip it. So instead of from consciousness interacting outward into the world, you flip around, you go back into consciousness, but with your awareness. And so you're tapping into that field, and you learn to focus on very specific individual elements that are found within that field. Very much like when you use your phone to go find another app. So like a good metaphor for it is like, you know, there's the Archangel Michael app, and then there's the Buddha app, and there's like little bits of code that are within that field. And you learn how to navigate it, and it's fascinating. It has within it everything you would ever want to learn or understand. It's in the great field of consciousness. It's what the psychologists theorize is like the collective consciousness, and it's shared between us all. And because of our beliefs and because of our continued understanding and prayer to these different beings, they have, you know, greater purpose within that field. Mm. And so you can tap into it, you can interact with them, you can learn from them. And I think that's what's happening.
At this point, if you watch something like The Avengers, does it feel more like a documentary than a fiction? Yeah, I'm thinking Doctor Strange, and just with what you explained then about being able to split yourself off into multiple versions, all of a sudden those films don't sound so far-fetched.
It's really sci-fi. I think sci-fi was born out of mysticism and shamanism. So like pre-sci-fi was mysticism and shamanism. And then sci-fi has a bit of imagination and fantasy associated with it. And so I think what's important is to understand that in our work, we're not as interested in fantasy. We understand that we can create it, but we're not as interested in it. We're interested in extraordinary phenomena that are is based in fact and real, and then trying to understand how and why that even occurs or works. But yes, these certain elements, I would say, certain elements seem just kind of matter of fact. Like, you know, you see intradimensional portals and you can go through them and end up somewhere else. That's very common in vision. You can see people that within the nature of vision have extraordinary capacities that go beyond that of the normal five senses. You commonly have experiences of mind melding and different kinds of telepathy. It's common to have experiences of seeing other, both within the field of Earth and beyond. So the ability of what people would call space travel is actually really common. So you get a group of people together, get 30 people together, go through a ceremony, and the next day ask them what happened, and 20 of them said they were flying through spiral galaxies and things, or visiting other planets. Like, just, they're not speaking matter-of-factly. Well, last night I visited this other planet. Like, they got those kinds of things, and that's all part of typically our sci-fi. But with this phenomena of consciousness, those things that would seem impossible are now becoming not only more and more possible, but also codified. There's so many people now having these experiences and talking about it that there's a mass of anecdotal evidence for this that is starting to show a lot of commonality in the experiences people have.
Yeah, it's mind-bending. And hearing about it just makes me feel like I know nothing and there's and I want to learn it all. having done, you know, the visionary planets, like you said, like 3,000 or so times, how much difference is there from you from being in the altered state of consciousness through using a plant versus everyday living? And can you kind of access those states without the plants at this point?
Normal everyday living requires a very consistent state of consciousness, like just to have this conversation or to work on a computer, you know, et cetera, drive a car, those kinds of things. So you learn how to wield your consciousness to be in different states. Just very much like a meditator learns how to be doing the daily life and then sit down and can sit and meditate. And they're very different mind states associated with that. I think that's more like what this is like. So you, it's not about just getting into the visionary state and then being like that all the time, but rather having the ability to fluidly move from the state of consciousness that you need to be in to be focused in what you're doing, and then very easily move into the other states of consciousness, also depending on what you're doing and the purpose of them. For me, it's very natural to be in either of the states. So I can sit like this and have a conversation, and I can be in a very strong medicine ceremony, and the things that are happening in that ceremony are equally normal, equally common, and still very interesting. It doesn't get boring in any kind of way, but you know, easy to move in and out of those states. You learn how to communicate, like those mysteries that we were talking about, and those skills that we, and the tools that we learn, are available all the time. So the ability to communicate with other, the ability to tap in and have a greater understanding of what's going on, really understanding your intuition and having that expand to not just being a hunch, but have a lot of color and context associated with it, is kind of part of everyday life. And it just becomes kind of how you understand and how you share.
Do you think as people start to dive into these mysteries and become aware of them, it almost has an effect where they realize that I am tiny, I am minuscule, and there is all of this. And for a lot of people, the life is kind of the opposite, where they are everything and on the periphery is there's a little bit of this other stuff around it. Do you think as you start to go into these mysteries, it has this effect where you realize just how infinite everything is, which almost kind of makes you less important? And I don't mean that in a way of like, well, I'm not important now, but it almost kind of takes away some of the weight of what I think I am when you realize how much there really is going on.
Yeah, we used to call that the exploration of scale. And just the variation in scale that people experience. If we really look at it, if we break it down categorically, there are more stars than there are cells of your body. Like whole stars, there are more stars than individual cells of your body. And you're made up of 12 to 17 or approximate trillion cells. Right? So the egoic fixation that we have that makes us seem so big is a illusion inside our mind to actual scale. And the real scale is that we're like, if you think of one drop of water to the ocean, we're not even a water molecule to the rest of the universe. Not even. We're not even one of the atoms of how small we are to the rest of the universe. And some of the discoveries we made early on were ultimately corroborated by science. We were traveling the astral and seeing things that Hubble Space Telescope came out and showed us. They were already in our Icaros. They were already assimilated in our navigations. And we were seeing that. And then we were, same thing with gravity and the gravitational waves that Einstein had theorized that recently were proven. And then we made predictions about what would the Webb telescope would ultimately start finding. And that's being corroborated now by that telescope. So the idea of the vastness of this is very difficult to comprehend and how minute we are within it. But in that, I don't think being so small means that you're of less importance. I think being so small actually means you're of incredible importance. Like, how could the universe create something for us that is so complex? We are so complex. We are trillions upon trillions of microorganisms all working together to be a vessel so we can be alive and just talk and have this conversation. And we are... we're very complicated now in terms of what our culture is and what we are as a society. You know, our language, our thoughts, our understandings, you bring all of that together. And we realize that what we are is something very unique in the universe. And it doesn't diminish our importance that there's, you know, trillions upon trillions of galaxies. It actually, I think, adds to our importance that somehow Earth was able to self-organize into what we are. So, you know, often I think we abstract ourselves from Earth, but I think that that's foolish. One of the great mysteries of Earth is how Earth self-organized, like churned itself, evolved itself to the point that life started here. And we're made, every molecule of us is Earth molecule. Yeah. So somehow these trillions upon trillions upon trillions of molecules and trillions of cells were able to self-organize in this chain reaction of life that comes through procreation and ultimately single cell into what we are and continue that process. You know, somehow the Earth did that, and the Earth's very unique in that sense. And so I think that that just adds to this great mystery of what we are. And, you know, it's not about scale. It's about the importance of what we represent.
Have you got an explanation as to why we're here, why things have unfolded that way? Well, how do we go from, you know, the subatomic to the atomic to the protons and the electrons and the macrocellular level and the cellular level and the organisms? And have you got a felt sense of why that's happened?
Again, these are my own explorations and expressions. So I think it's open for debate and everybody can have their own version of this. But I put all of the responsibility on God. I think this is God's doing, but I I change my understanding from God did to God is doing. Not God did and now the universe is happening. God is doing through the universe and everything that's happening in the universe. And we as humans have developed what I call agency. A lot of people want to call it free will, but I don't think it's so free. It's willful, but we have agency. Mm. And I think at that point, we start to shape how we behave, fueled by this creative power of the divine. Mm. And as that occurs, you know, we have to take responsibility for our actions and take responsibility for what we now are in the universe. But I think it's a evolution that's brought forth by divinity. And I thought it was, I didn't understand why science had evolution and religion had the idea of creation when I thought creation was evolution. I thought they were the same thing. I didn't see them as two separate things. And so I saw this infinitely creative power powering the universe to infinitely be creating and evolving all the time. And I thought that that's part of God's evolution to bring forth new miracles, and that the miracle of life is part of that, including the creating the vessel for what I call soul. And I think human beings fundamentally are soul, and the human vessel, the shape and form that we are while we're alive, is the incubator for our soul. It's what allows us to come into existence, and it's miraculous and beautiful. It's not egoic or self-identified. It's a phenomena of the earth, and it's a relationship between God and earth as a place and a space that was capable of organizing into the shapes that we are and the form of life that we are, and that's a tremendous gift. And through that, universe was able to create soul and impart that soul to our beingness, and that's a union of God and the earth together. And it's the true miracle that we are.
For people who hear the word God and think of this thing that they don't believe in, which is a bearded white man in the sky, what's your understanding of God?
So, you know, first, I think that a lot of people have gotten turned off and scared of those letters and that syllable. And I think that that's sad, because there's something innate about the universe. And that's what I'm referring to when I use those letters and that syllable. I'm referring to why our ancestors, before there ever was a religion, came up with that idea and that statement in whatever language they used, whatever letters or whatever word or sound they used. They were describing a phenomenon. And that phenomenon, to me, I don't believe is in debate. I just fundamentally don't think of it as in debate. And I don't think there's a picture of it, and I don't think there's artwork of it. I don't think it's a person in any kind of way, et cetera. I don't think in those terms. What I think is from the origin to that. So I say, well, God means for me how the universe exists at all. And God means for me how there's any thoughts. And God means for me how there are any feelings and how there are any words and how there are any languages, and how there's any communication, and how there's any technology and any innovation, how there's any society, how there's any life at all. So it's from, now give it a sound, and I don't care what sound it is, from is all. Mm. So from, and it doesn't need a sound, but for language, we give it a sound. And that's what I'm referring to in that syllable, God. Mm. And it's before everything. Mm-hmm. It's before everything. It's not after institution or after society or after someone came up with a story of a person in a throne or something like that. It's before it all. Mm-hmm. And it's how you could even get to a story, and it's how you could even get to an effigy. To me, that picture is an effigy. It's a piece of artwork.
Yeah.
You know, it's referring to something, and that's what language is about. It's referring to the meaning that sits behind the statement. And so to me, the origin, of the whole universe all at the same time, and not before Big Bang, or no, through this entire process, that still exists and is still very real. And it's part of every moment, and it's part of everything. And I include the matter in it, in my mindset. So I include Earth, and I include the molecules. I include the material physics. And I use that as a way to prove existence-ness. Mm-hmm. And so I think of like any existence-ness at all, which is the phenomena of this universe, is that presence that I'm trying to describe, and that in the English language, whether we like it or not, the syllable that was given to that is God. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have to look at why we are uncomfortable by that sound, and what that sound means, and what that discomfort means, so that we can ultimately find something that's fundamentally factual about us. Like call your origin whatever you want, but that's still your origin.
Mm-hmm. You know, something that Gaffney says that I really like is, the God you don't believe in doesn't exist. And I don't believe in the God you don't believe in. And to me, that makes so much sense, because a lot of people have this idea, and, you know, they just kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater of, well, that doesn't make sense, so I guess God isn't real, versus, well, that doesn't make sense, so what is God? And, you know, you said before religion, we had this idea of God. And, you know, like I love the paradox that's in all of this, because in the mysteries, I think it is about holding the paradox. And, you know, before religion, we had an idea of God, but God had an idea of us. And whilst there isn't an art piece that depicts God, but also on the other side of the paradox is, the art piece is God, and God is through the art piece. And for me, when it comes to exploring the mysteries, the thing that I find is that it's like, The idea of duality almost has to collapse, where you realize, you know, God is outside of me, it's in me, it's through me, it's as me. And, you know, you start to look at, I really enjoy looking at some of the biblical teachings and then going, what's the deeper meaning of that? What's the mystery that's in that? So if we were created in the image of God, some people might think, well, that means God's human. But actually, it also says God is love. So if we were created in the image of God and God is love, it means we are love. It says we were created in the image of God and God is the creator. Well, if I was created in the image of God and God is the creator, that means I am the creator. What am I the creator of? The creator of my life. The creator of my reality. And to me, this is like, I feel like in the mysteries, you have to almost start kind of be able to, it feels like the idea or the concept of contradiction is like a barrier into exploring the mysteries. And I think if you can actually hold them together, it starts to become this, like, you just start laughing at what you start to find and uncover.
I think you're navigating our ideologies and our belief systems. And what I hear is something really important for anybody in these pursuits to understand, which is that you're applying philosophy and you're applying an understanding, and you're saying, well, if this means that, what does that then trigger? What's the, you know, the cascade of understandings that come if this new understanding is real? And I think that that's exactly how we navigate the paradoxes and go through them. And those paradoxes are part of our knowledge base. It's part of our ideological matrix. And it's not all figured out yet. So a lot of people are running around with this general ideology. Oh, it's all figured out. No, on the contrary, it's barely 1% figured out. It's 0.0000% figured out. And we're just aligning these flaws in our own understandings, and we're starting to apply a greater philosophy to it. And that is the pursuit. And that's an incredible way to explore the mysteries and also navigate and find our way through them. And I agree with you completely that what seems like paradoxes and transcending different understandings of duality and utilizing the separation in the form of two and a comparison between it is necessary to understanding something like God or gaining greater understanding of something like God. The in through and all around principle is very potent and important. And people will misunderstand that. They'll say, well, I'm not God and you're not God. And it's not in the I or the you, it's in a greater state of consciousness. It's through everything and that it's part of everything. And we are part and parcel of that expression. And I think it's really important to not just believe it, but to have the visionary plant ceremony experience that makes it tangible. And then you can, people actually see it. People know it. People wake up to the different states of consciousness that make that very real for them. And I welcome everybody to that pursuit. It's fun. It starts to unravel the different conflicts that we have in our space and our understanding. And we can work our way through the paradoxes. And I found it to be a really interesting and core part of my practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, there's a saying that I came across recently, which I love, and it's, I only believe in things I don't know. And it feels so right to me. It's like, yeah, I don't, for me, my experience of life is I don't have to believe in God. I know God. I've had a felt experience, not as a one-off, but every day I have a felt experience and connection, understanding of what that is, of the field that I'm a part of. And it almost be like a white blood cell in the body thinking it was this individual thing that isn't part of something greater. Just not the microphone. For me to feel that I am just separate self would be almost like a white blood cell thinking that, okay, I guess this is just me and I'm not a part of anything of the whole in this body.
Exactly. That's exactly how I see it too. I love the idea of transcending belief and faith. You know, I think starting with the idea that there's a possibility or there's faith for something more is a great starting point. And then after that, you amass experience. And when you have direct experience, direct communion, direct knowledge, you don't have to believe in it anymore because it happened. You know, you don't go to a restaurant and have a big meal and walk out of the restaurant and think maybe, just maybe, you had a big meal. You don't question it. You know it. You know exactly it. You had the experience. You don't have thirst and then drink a big cup of water and then walk away and go, oh, did I drink water? Like, did that happen? It's not like that. You know at that point then what quenching your thirst is and what water is. And that's exactly like this. You have the experience and you know it. And as you, it starts as the first time and then you have more experience with it. And I love the idea of recognizing that it's not just in the ceremony, that ultimately you have it all the time with you. And that to me represents an awakening of consciousness that, you know, you've awakened to understanding the presence of the divine, you know, as we describe in through and all around all the time. And I think that's available to all of us if we want to pursue it.
So the Blue Morpho Mystery School, a few questions on it. Who is it for? For anyone who's listening, like, who would you say this is for?
I think the Mystery School is for anybody that's interested in the topics that we just described. Mm-hmm. If you're interested in exploring the mysteries, exploring the paradoxes, exploring plant medicines and altered states of consciousness, learning how to use them safely and navigate with them, enriching your life with them. If you want mentorship and you feel a resonance and a vibe with us, then I think this is a perfect opportunity for you. And also to be part of a community that's exploring these kinds of thoughts and ideas openly and sharing our understandings without dogma or forcing you to believe anything. It's an open space for you to explore and get to know yourself better, as well as share in the great mysteries and receive both transformation and personal healing, as well as a tremendous amount of knowledge and discovery about the universe.
Amazing. And you kind of half, well, you probably more than half answered the next question, but I'm someone who's interested in the mysteries. I'm now interested in the Mystery School. What can I expect as my experience of being a part of the Mystery School?
The Mystery School, it's community. And so we get together virtually and in person at different times. It's not mandatory to get together in person, but it's beautiful to have an opportunity to be in the presence of other people that are part of your community. And we get together on a weekly basis and there's a lesson where we discuss one of these mysteries or some kind of skill or technique that we're talking about. And most of those will come directly from polling the community about what's really interesting to them, because there's a kind of natural progression on pulling that thread like we've been describing. And so there's going to be a weekly lesson. And then there's study groups, like smaller groups that of the main group that get together and discuss the nature of the lesson, and then get ready to bring that into a sacred plant ceremony. And then people do that individually. They sit with themselves, or there's group ceremonies, virtual ceremonies, in-person ceremonies, and also times when we all get together in person and virtually. And that's where we take then that idea into the ceremonial practice, and we explore the altered states. And that can be done without plant medicines. It can be done through breath work and authentic movement and trance. And it can also then include all of the different kinds of plant medicines that people work with and psychedelics. And from that, people have discovery. So it's an open field. It's not to learn a lesson the way someone taught it. It's to take that lesson into the field of discovery and come out with your own knowledge and understanding from that, bring it back to the community and share it. Mm-hmm. And we share it in a variety of forms, through the written form, through audio and video. And then we archive all of that as a record of the things that we're learning and discovering together. And then we build on that every week. And we continue to discover those mysteries. And that archive becomes a resource to FAQ and to go back into and find if other people are having similar experiences to you, etc. And then there's the support nature of the community itself. So there's chat groups and discussion groups, and there's a natural flow associated with it.
I love that. As we were saying that, one of the things that came up, and then you kind of almost touched on it, but it felt like as people are exploring these mysteries in a more of a collective, it feels like there's an opportunity to maybe to create literature and texts out of that, where it's not just the experience of one, but when you're getting these different touch points, these different vantage points of reality, everyone having their experience. But then as we see these commonalities, it feels like there'd be a really cool opportunity to create these kind of like texts and this literature that's out of these joint experiences. But, what you kind of just alluded to is very similar, like it being archived, it being in FAQs and video. That's really exciting.
Well, yeah, thank you. The idea of the Mystery School is that everyone has merit and value, and everyone has unique talents to be able to share and offer. And there's direct communion and communication beyond our normal experience as we explore. And so everybody has a voice, and everybody gets to share the way that they would like to. And, if someone's shy and they don't want to, obviously they don't have to. But by bringing that voice and bringing what they each individual experiences to this, we get a wide variety of understanding about the connection that people have. Like we talked about God. If someone were on the journey of God, what are they experiencing? And then bringing that together, not just one teacher teaching what it's supposed to be, but everybody together saying, this is what I discovered, this is what I experienced, gives us a richness of information and understanding to share. And I would love to see it in books, and I would love to see it in other forms that people could learn from.
Incredible. And I guess lastly, for people that are sold, that are in, that want to be a part of this and they want to explore the mysteries, what's the best way for them to move forward from here?
The best way is to go to bluemorphoacademy.com and sign up for the Mystery School waitlist. And then as soon as it launches later this month, sign up and join. And we're going to be kicking it off in early November.
Incredible. Amazing, Hamilton. Thanks so much again for being here for the third time. Every time it's an absolute joy and pleasure. And I look forward to more to come, and just more unfolding of the study that I'm doing with you, and also how I can contribute. And it's amazing to share this journey and to have this opportunity to explore these mysteries and the phenomena that is life. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Sabra. It's a pleasure, and love being on your podcast. So thanks so much as well.
Yeah. Thanks again.